I am Adam Goldstein. I'm from the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. We're a nonpartisan nonprofit that gives legal help to college students and faculty members when they have problems with free speech, due process, and other civil rights. And yeah, I want to talk about FERPA. And I tweeted it when I was promoting this. I tweeted that if you were a complicated student, you might want to look at your education records. And I said, I believe many of us here would be complicated students. I know I certainly was. I was not an enthusiastic student in high school, certainly. I got a D in high school English one semester, which would probably shock a lot of people who know me. And I got the D in English because I refused to read the books, because the books were fiction, and I didn't want to pollute my mind with made-up stuff. My English teacher, Mrs. Hauser, said, but I saw you reading science fiction. I said, science fiction isn't made up, it's just stuff that hasn't happened yet. Like, you can't prove it didn't happen, whereas I can prove that these other made-up books didn't happen because they're in the past. My relationship to my high school administrators wasn't stellar. Went to college and law school here in New York, went to Fordham. Got a fine education from the Jesuits. Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then applied to join the bar, because I'm a lawyer. I just dress this way because I'm grown. I dress how I freaking like. Let me give you actually a bit of life advice I've noticed. If you dress like maintenance, you can walk into any building and no one stops you. The only trouble this ever gave me was when I was speaking at Columbia, and I was walking by and they asked me to fix the elevator. And I thought about it for a minute. I was like, risk versus reward. If I fix the elevator, epic story I can tell at a bar, right? If I don't fix the elevator, somebody dies. I opted on the let's not kill randos side. So anyway, when I'm applying for the bar in New York, they give you this like character and fitness form because, God forbid, if we ever had a lawyer who wasn't an upstanding citizen,
they
become a judge. Right, if we get promoted. Worked for my dad. The question they asked me on this form included, did you have any disciplinary history in education going back to middle school? Going back to middle school, I was like, but like that. So if I wrote like a swear word on the board in middle school, you want to talk about it? You want to like have a conversation about that time I did that? And I realized I had this bad relationship with my high school, and I have no idea what's actually in my student record. Little did I realize that so much of that was going to be taking up so much of my life. And you know your school experience was bad when you dedicate the rest of your life to messing with schools, which, like. I bet my high school principal, if he's still alive, feels really good about himself right now. So let's talk about FERPA. FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, a law that nobody knows a whole lot about. And I should pause and say, one thing we're not going to talk about right now is federal FOIA, but there's a flyer on the door for a session in Budapest. I want to say it's, what is it, at 5 o'clock tomorrow? Check the door because I could be wrong. My memory is 7 to 9. Thank you. Between 7 to 9 tomorrow, there'll be a workshop on federal FOIA you should absolutely go to. We're going to talk a little bit about state freedom of information law, although not a whole lot, because this is its own separate entity, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And when you see it in the media, what they talk about, if FERPA is used as a reason not to give you something, right? You'll say, well, we'd like to tell you what happened, but we can't because of FERPA. And this is an abuse I've seen so many times that you can't imagine the lack of conscience that some people have about this. There was a high school where a student lost his life somehow. They found him rolled up in a gym mat. And the theory is that he was on the bleachers and fell off the bleachers and landed in the rolled up mats and then was upside down and couldn't get out and just died. And they have these security cameras. The family wanted to see the security footage of their son's death. And the school said, we can't give you that because of FERPA, which is wrong on a lot of legal levels. Obviously, on a moral level, is wrong. The interesting thing about this is that this is not why FERPA exists. The primary purpose of FERPA was not to withhold records. FERPA was passed in late 1974, and it was a reaction to Nixon's plumbers, who... Speaking of lawyers who are fine, upstanding citizens, some of them, maybe this is why we have a questionnaire. Nixon's plumbers would go to, like, Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office trying to find information about him. They would try to dig up things from people's past so they could say terrible things about you, which I guess in, you know, early 1970s were, I don't know, you said something nice about the Soviets at one point, or I don't know. But in order to prevent abuses like this in the future, they wanted to make a law that, number one, would let you inspect your education records to see what people had written down about you. And the easiest way to analogize this is, do you remember that Seinfeld episode with Elaine and the doctors, and the doctors all wrote things in her file and she couldn't see what it was, but she couldn't get a doctor? Well, we fixed that with HIPAA, saying you have a right to see your records. But this is the education equivalent, is that you could get through your education career and find out that schools aren't accepting you, colleges aren't accepting you, graduate programs aren't accepting you, and you don't know why, until you actually look at the education records your prior school has sent to your next school. And you'll find out sometimes that there's a letter in there from your principal or from your dean saying, I don't think you should admit this person because they're of bad moral character. Or sometimes it'll be more specific. Sometimes it'll just be wrong. So the purpose they don't talk about is the right to access these records, right? So let's talk about what do you have to do to actually access your records under FERPA. There's not a lot of formality involved. You have to make a request that could be understood as a request to inspect your education record. And going back to this, my sartorial tastes here, if I were to dress up like, you know, a proper professional lawyer, and I went in with my briefcase, which I assume I have now, and I handed them my written form, which we'll get to later, saying, I want to inspect my education records. They have an obligation to let me inspect my education records. If, on the other hand, I wear a leopard print Speedo, and I go into the place while making gorilla noises, I unwrap a Big Mac, and then in ketchup, write FERPA with a question mark, technically that would trigger their obligation, because it could be understood as a request to inspect my education records. So what do they have to do? They have 45 days from the date of your request, and that's 45 days counting on the calendar, and if you land on a weekend, go forward to you're not on a weekend or a holiday, to give you access to your records. Now, I say access to because FERPA was not written in the belief that schools would be trying to game it. When they were writing FERPA, their concern was third parties trying to get your information to use it against you, right? Or third parties putting incorrect information in your file that would be used against you whether you knew it or not. The senators really weren't focusing on the idea that the schools would actually be trying to game the system to stop you from getting your records. And part of the reason they do this is a little cul-de-sac we have to go down. I don't think school administrators are evil. I think they're like a lot of us in that they want to get from the beginning of the day to the end of the day with as little suffering as possible. And there aren't a lot of people who request their FERPA records as like on a national level. If you go to a small enough school, they may not have had a FERPA request in their memory because people just don't do it that often because they don't know about the law. Because why would they teach you about this law? Because it's a pain for them if you do it. So they tend to view, school administrators tend to view a request to access your FERPA records as a hostile act. And occasionally it is a hostile act. I mean, there are times where the reason why you want to inspect your FERPA record is because you've been through a disciplinary process where you were acquitted, right? Because this happens. You know, let's say you're brought up and you're accused of cheating. You go through the process and they determine you weren't cheating. Great. But I want to know, what are you saying about this process in my record? Because it doesn't help me if I'm applying to a graduate program or if I'm applying to the bar. If you give them my record which says, oh, he's a great student, we found that he wasn't cheating the three times we looked into it. It's like, well, thanks, you know. It's a great recommendation. It's like having a long line of strippers willing to tell your girlfriend how faithful you are. Thanks. So you might want to inspect your records there. And so they tend to view that as you're trying to get them in trouble. Sometimes, you know, you just want to see what's there because you don't know what's there. Or because, as I said, you were like me, you were a complicated student. I don't know for a fact that they wrote nasty things about me, but if they didn't, it's only because they had limited English skills. Oh, and they wasted their time reading fiction. So the school administrators will try to frustrate your access just out of a sense of you're inconvenient to me and I want you to go away. The simplest way in which they'll try to do this is, technically speaking, The letter of FERPA does not require them to give you a copy of your records. It requires them to let you inspect your records. At a public institution, this doesn't matter because every state has a FOIA law. Once the personal privacy exemption is eliminated, because it's your records, you have a right to see your own record, there's no privacy problem, you can get your record from a public institution under your state's FOIA law. I mean, you can get a copy of it. The problem is at private institutions where you don't have that. So I want to talk about a couple of problems I've seen with private institutions. One of them is I don't want to call any institutions out except for the really bad ones like Tulane. Tulane has told students, you can come in to see your record. We know it'll take us however many weeks to get it together. We will put it in our basement, which isn't air conditioned. And as long as you want to spend it in our unair conditioned basement inspecting your records, you can do that. So that is not great, obviously. Another institution, and again, I don't want to call anybody out, American University. Don't want to, but I kind of got to because they're the bad people. They told one student they wouldn't give him access to his record unless he paid for the copies of the transcription. The transcription was already made, and they wanted him to pay half the cost, $1,500, to access the existing transcription. Well, that's clearly illegal under FERPA. What FERPA says is, in terms of cost, they can charge you the cost of reproduction. They can't charge you to search for the records, and they can't charge you to access the records. They can't charge you to look at the records, and they can't charge you to correct the records. If you get a copy, they can charge you for the actual cost of the copying. Since they don't have to actually give you a copy, of course, at a private school, that's of questionable value. Another way in which I've seen this frustrated, and this school I actually won't call out because I'm just not sure I remember which one it is. It could be one of three. You know, there's some schools that are like, they all have the same name. It's like very close to it. I just feel like maybe we at some point started phoning it in with college names. I mean, like, well, the worst one, and this isn't the school I'm talking about in terms of FERPA, but like University of Maryland University College. Well, you got like six words in your name, two of them are articles and three of them are the same. I mean, come on, guys. I hope you don't have a creative arts program because you're not. I don't want that degree. College, university, home of the team. Anyway, FERPA. Yes, I remember. That's why I'm here. Okay. One problem in accessing the records would be they won't collect them for you. Now, they're supposed to collect them. If I go to any person who is an employee of the institution, they have an obligation to fulfill my FERPA request. And the obligation, by the way, this is the Department of Education enforces it, and the failure to abide by it is the law, could result in the loss of all federal funding. So it applies to any institution that gets federal funding, which is basically every educational institution in the country anymore. I think even Bob Jones has taken student loans now. They have an obligation to comply with FERPA. One way in which that some schools will try to frustrate this is they'll say, well, we're going to give you your records. You ask the registrar. We're going to give you the records the registrar has, but just FYI, there may be records other people have. I don't know. Legally, that doesn't meet their obligation. Our obligation is to give me my records when I ask for my records. Also, this creates a problem in that you don't necessarily know who has all the records that name you. And this became a specific problem when there was a student at a school where he was, the school had come up with a, it was functionally a bias response team. I don't know if you're familiar with bias response teams, but this is like, someone said something that might have been racist somewhere, so I don't know, you put up the racism signal and they fly in or something. I don't know what they're supposed to do. It's like, people are racist sometimes, welcome to the world. Like seriously, what are they gonna do when they get there? They're gonna be like, hey, stop it. Well, that's a good use of our education funding. Thank you for that. It wouldn't occur to me to just tell them to stop it. But they have these response teams, and there was a guy who was a military veteran and got into some dispute with his institution over. There was a veterans group, and there were two veterans who were struggling for control of the group, and one of the veterans said, oh, this guy said he was going to do something bad to me. So he got investigated by one of these teams. The problem was the school didn't acknowledge the existence of the team openly. He only found out accidentally and indirectly, where someone said, well, the team investigated and found it was fine. It was like, the team, what team? Like, oops. So he knows that there's records about him in the hands of a team, the composition of which he doesn't know. But he knows it's some administrators in the school. So he asked to see his records, and the school said, well, you're gonna have to request them from the people who have them. Of course, he doesn't know who has the records because he doesn't know who's on the team. So, number one, that's legally insufficient. But number two, if they really want to play this game, like, I could send a record, I could send this request to every single person in the school if you want me to. But then they're all going to have an independent obligation to have me inspect those records. And if any one of them fails to meet that obligation, then you could get in trouble with the Department of Education. It's like, why would you want to obligate yourself to 3,000 FERPA requests instead of one when the risk of failure is so dire? So let's say you get to the record. Let's say, you know, you actually get your record, or you go to Tulane and they put you in the basement room, and you're sweating it out down there. I don't know if they let you bring in liquid or not. I assume you can drink down there. It's probably not that bad. Yep.
Are any schools, like, do they disallow, like, photos or say, no, you can only look, you can't copy? Is anybody that?
The question is, do schools disallow photos of the records? Like, if you took out your cell phone. I've heard that from some schools, that they will actually try to stop you from taking pictures of the record. And their explanation will be sometimes be that there's other people's FERPA records in your FERPA records. Which is a hell of an interesting catch-22. The record relates to you, but it relates to someone else. You see this less anymore because the Department of Education has started to intervene and tell them this is not how the world works. But I think it was as late as 10 years ago, the position of the Department of Education was that if you had two students and student A punches student B, student B wouldn't necessarily be allowed to see the full record of the investigation because it would name student A. It's like, well, student A, and this happens a lot even in like elementary schools and middle schools, because you'll have a parent who says, my kid came home and got punched in the face, and I want to know who punched my kid, and they're going to say, oh, we can't tell you. And the Department of Education has started to push back on that and been like, listen, guys, try to be a little bit rational about this stuff. Also, in that instance, the name of the kid who punched your kid actually does relate specifically to your kid. That's part of their record. So they can redact the names of witnesses. And I guess we should talk a little bit about, actually, because you're talking about the ability to take pictures of the written records. But the record in the regulations is any recorded information. So if they have pictures, if they have emails. Now, here's the wrinkle. There's really two parts to this test. Is something a FERPA record? Is something an education record? One is, it has to be maintained by the institution, which we'll circle back to in a minute. And the other is that it must make you identifiable. So it's not just things that have your name on them. It's things that would single you out as an individual. Like, when I was in high school, if they, there was two Jewish kids in the school, there was me and my sister, and so if it was a male Jewish student, it was me. I went to school in the middle of nowhere in Ohio. It was near Amish country. It was not an exciting place. That's why you read a lot of science fiction. And one time we did terrible things to the cheese museum, but that's not in my student record because they never caught me, so. I was like, that's right. Like, my student ran. The really shocking thing is you know, if there was one thing you knew about me that would totally shock you, it's that when you list the deadly sins I'm guilty of, gluttony's like fourth. Didn't even crack the top three. Anyway, maintained by the institution. The record has to be maintained by the institution. So what does that mean? Well, where this becomes interesting is in the case of emails. Are emails in your professor's email box maintained by the institution? And it depends. The key question is, could the professor delete it whenever they want to? If there's no records retention rule that says they can't just delete emails, then they're not really being maintained. They're just sort of there. And also, one thing that isn't considered maintained by the institution are notes that are for personal recollection that aren't distributed to other people. So if, for whatever reason, your professor has like a folder with a bunch of information you think is about you, but they've never shown it to anyone, it's kind of like the tree falling in the forest, you don't get that as a FERPA record, because if they're not showing it to anyone, then it's not available to anybody else. One thing I want to talk about in this, and I'm skipping around a lot, I know, because I'm nervous, because you all look like ghosts from here, and ghosts are scary, is that the law enforcement units of educational institutions aren't considered part of the institution for purposes of FERPA. So if you say, I want to see all my records in the possession of the institution, you're not going to see things that are in possession of campus security or campus law enforcement, even if they're not sworn law enforcement, even if they're basically mall cops with fancier patches, their records are still considered not part of the institution. And this does actually create a weird dichotomy when it comes to student discipline records, because how, you know, your ability to access the records they have about you is going to vary depending on how they decide to treat the investigation of what you did. And there's no rhyme or reason whatsoever to this. I mean, there's no logic to it. Like, there'll be some schools where they'll have campus security, you know, investigate illegal downloading while they have, like, the campus disciplinary board investigating sexual assaults. Like, I never understood, like, is this really a good place for amateurs to dabble in investigations? You want to start them there? Can't work them up from, like, traffic violations? But in that case, then the records of the sexual assault investigation would be accessible under FERPA, but the records of the illegal downloading wouldn't be, because they're in the hands of campus law enforcement. Now, depending on the state you're in, campus law enforcement records may be available under regular FOIA. Once again, there's no rhyme or reason to that. It just depends on which state judge happened to get the question and how they were feeling that day and whether they considered it, you know, useful. I mean, as a general matter, if your campus law enforcement has sworn officers, in most places, not Massachusetts or Connecticut, but in most places, that creates an obligation to turn over records. Because if you have the ability to handcuff someone and detain them, you probably have an obligation to tell people you did it, or else you're just kidnapping them. So that, not in Massachusetts and Connecticut, you can just kidnap people if you're campus law enforcement. So consider that when you're deciding where you're going to go to graduate school and how likely you are to interact with campus police when you go there. One important piece to this is one of the obligations imposed on the institution is they have to maintain a record of requests to see your records. And they have to list when they acquiesced to those requests and the rationale for why they did it. There's a bunch of little exceptions in FERPA for people who are allowed to see your records. If you are a dependent of your parents, presently, not at the time you attended, but if you're presently a dependent of your parents and they're paying the bills, they can see financial records related to you. There's certain records that schools are allowed to turn over to law enforcement without permission. This is another great example of FERPA abuse, actually. Oklahoma State. Oh, boy. I don't normally believe in content warnings, but this is an ugly story, so I apologize in advance, because it's about a serial sex offender. Oklahoma State had five male students come forward and say that during an on-campus orientation, they called Camp Cowboy, which really is shades of Penn State right there, they had been sexually assaulted by one of the students who was acting as sort of a counselor for this orientation. The school had private disciplinary hearings and determined that they believed that four of the five guys were credible, which I thought was the most astonishing part of the story to me. Like, no, the fifth guy just wants to be cool? You know how guys are, always bragging about that. Anyway, the school then suspended the offender for 6 semesters, I believe, because that was when his last victim would have graduated, and then didn't tell anybody, didn't tell law enforcement. So that fifth guy who wasn't believed went to the campus paper. The campus paper went to the city cops, and the city cops said, nobody told us this happened. And the school said, well, we didn't tell you because of FERPA. there's two things I want to say about this. One is that it's very clear on the law. FERPA says that if you believe there is a threat to safety or security, nothing in FERPA prevents an employee of an institution from reporting that threat to any authority as necessary, whether that's federal, state, anybody who might be able to intervene. The other thing I want to say is you shouldn't need to be told that. Even if FERPA said you couldn't do that, I would say, by all means, come take away my federal funding. I'm not going to just let rapists wander around because an education regulation said it might be convenient. Like, that's not a good enough reason for me. So anyway, when the police did investigate, they found like a dozen other victims. Because of course they did, because who stops at four? At that point, it's a lifestyle choice. So he ultimately obviously got, deferred prosecution because he went to counseling at his church, but whatever. That's another problem with what's wrong with things. That's not a FERPA problem. The point being, one is that this is a way people abuse FERPA to access to privacy. The other thing is that they might have disclosed your records to law enforcement without telling you because they thought, for whatever reason, you might have been a threat to someone or others. It is entirely possible. I haven't seen it, but I know I haven't seen it because it's happening. The point of this is that it's happening in secret, so how would I see it? For an institution to decide that you are somehow a threat to national security, so they go and they tell the Secret Service. The Secret Service investigates you and decides you're not a threat to national security. And now there's a record in your file saying that, oh, he might be a threat to national security, and the Secret Service has a file on you, and you've been told nothing, and you have no awareness that this exists. You'll find out when you apply for your job at the FBI, and you fail your background check, and you're like, what happened? This log is supposed to be kept with your education records, this access log. It isn't necessarily always because schools are inconsistent observers of FERPA's regulations. In making a FERPA request, if you know what you're looking for, it may not be necessary to ask for this access log. If you know that what I want is that time I was accused of plagiarism, I want those investigation records, you can say, I want the records about, you know, at the student conduct hearing on these dates, give me those records. If you don't necessarily know what you're looking for, you're just trying to see, is there something in there, you absolutely want to specifically request that access log, because that will tell you if they've disclosed the information to law enforcement. The only things that wouldn't be in that access log is if they thought you were engaged in terrorism, or there was a grand jury subpoena. Those are the two exemptions to the access log. So if you're engaged in terrorism and there's a grand jury subpoena about you, this is not the best use of your time, by the way. Like, you should probably be leaving the country. Like, arguing about your student record, not a priority. But let's talk about arguing about your student record. So let's say you get your record and you find out there's something completely bogus in it. They say, you know, you... Well, shoot, they say you're a threat to national security, which is completely bogus. And the reason I keep bringing that one up is because... Indulge me for 45 seconds. I want to give you some life advice. The greatest skill I have, other than the ability to eat buffalo wings and spit out the bones without actually using my hands, is that, I mean, that's pretty braggable, right? Thank you, right? Next hope. Look for it in the schedule. Be next to the lockpick area downstairs. I'll just be going for distance on the bones. Anyway, but next to that, my greatest skill is the ability to interview people and ask them questions and get answers. And one of the things I always impress on people when I'm teaching them how to ask questions is the value of silence. Especially if you're recording it or in a situation like this, if you ask someone a question and you don't get the answer you want, just don't say anything and just let silence sit for a minute. Because a lot of people will feel they'll feel uncomfortable about the silence, especially if they're withholding something. And an example of this is I had an intern who went on to write for the Yale Daily News, and I expressed this to him. And he was investigating an odd story on campus where a guy just vanished. Don't know where he went. And he called the dean of students and said, "Hey, I'm just looking into this guy's disappearance. Do you know anything about that?" And the dean of students said, "I can't tell you anything about that." So he just said nothing. He just waited. And the dean of students said, "The Secret Service told me not to." You don't have to be a journalist but to know that when the explanation is I can't answer your question because the Secret Service told me not to, there may be some story there. And what actually happened was they found out the guy had stolen an identity. Basically, he had a really odd name that happened to be shared by one other person. The other person that he had been going to Columbia, and he had transferred into Yale using that person's Columbia record without telling anybody. And then just before he graduated, he broke up with his boyfriend, and his boyfriend ratted him out, and the school turned him in. So, don't break up with your boyfriend before graduation if you've stolen an identity. You're learning a lot here. This is gold. Where else in your life have you ever gotten that advice, and yet it's so valuable? This thing about silence and asking questions and what do you do when you see something on your record? This is why I keep going back to the threat to national security, because the Secret Service was investigating that, and I keep thinking about there's an interesting example. So you find out in your record, they say that you were a threat to national security and you were investigated, and the results were inconclusive. That's the first you hear about it, is you've asked to inspect your records and you got the copy of them, / you went to the basement, and you take a picture of it. What do you do about the fact that your record is wrong? FERPA says you have a right to a hearing. In fact, the regulations actually stipulate a few things about how this hearing has to be conducted. Unfortunately, some of the stipulations are mushy and aspirational, like a reasonable time from now. Not everybody agrees on what's reasonable. As I'm sure, you know, you've discovered in your relationships, reasonable is pretty subjective. But some things are actually objective, and one of them is you have to be in front of a neutral decision maker with no interest in the outcome, and you have to be given a full and fair chance to be heard. So what this alone means, the person you are appealing to cannot be the person who wrote what's in that file, can't be the person who was a witness to what's in that file. It has to be somebody who's neutral. It has to be somebody who, if they found in your favor, wouldn't be viewed in a negative light. Like if the person who is overseeing this is the guy who's the head of the panel that said you were a threat, that's not a full and fair chance to be heard, because the panel said you were a threat before. And then they have to issue an opinion in a reasonable time, whatever that means. I mean, reasonableness, for the most part, the argument I would make is if it takes 45 days to inspect the record, 45 days ought to be a pretty reasonable period for issuing a panel ruling on these things. If they find in your favor that this information should not be in your record, it's gone. They take it out. If they don't find it in your favor, you still have a right to write something and have it included in the record. Actually, you have the right to submit any record. So if you want to sing a song about it, you know, do some crayon artwork and put that in there, you can do that. Or you know, make a video of you saying this is bogus. You have a right to do that too. So that right to amend the record at that point is absolute. You can write whatever you want there. So even if you lose the hearing, you still get the ability to say, by the way, this is completely bogus. This guy had it in for me. Now, obviously, within the bounds of defamation law, there's probably some limit to what you can say about that. This guy had it in for me, and he strangles dogs for sexual pleasure. That may not be great. I might not want to write that. But this guy had it in for me, and he never liked me, and he's always been biased against me, and I think he probably doesn't like anybody of my race or demographic. Might be okay. Substantively, that's what I had to cover. So questions, concerns, comments, threats. I'll tell you one thing about this. I'm doing a workshop at 3 in Paris, the room Paris. And I've got a form that consolidates a lot of these things into one legally recognizable form. It's slightly better than a Burger King wrapper, I'd like to think. There's also, I say that, but it's nobody practices FERPA law. So it's there's 2 dozen experts in the world. realistically, would any of you know if I just made this law up entirely? That's what I'm saying. So this is a record that is better than anything they've seen that I've written, I guarantee you. For ease of use, though, and access, I threw it up on a little website. If you go to studentrecord.org, it's available to download, so you're welcome to come to the workshop if you want help in submitting these records. You can do it electronically, you can do it in print. I've got envelopes and stuff. If you don't want my help and want me to go away and shut up, you can go to that website, download it, and amend that record however you like before you send it in. So thoughts, concerns, comments, questions, hate mail, death threats, questions about how I do the buffalo wing thing.
Can I turn this on? There we go. So having an incredibly sketchy educational record as well, I think I've dropped out of more schools than I've graduated from. if I file a request like this, which I'm super interested in doing, as I've got one more degree left to go that I want to do, might anything bubble to the surface that I don't want to have bubble to the surface if I make this kind of a request?
Yeah, the question was, if you make the request, is it possible that you might surface things in here that wouldn't have come up otherwise? The short answer is not that I've never heard of that. I mean, for that to happen, I guess it's not totally impossible. Here's the dominoes, I guess, that would have to happen. Somebody on campus has a record about you that's false or damaging, inaccurate, or I don't know. But somebody on you has this record, and it's not in a centralized location right now. So if that other school requests your records, it may not come back with what the registrar has. But then by virtue of filing the request, it is possible, I guess, they centralize your information in one place, and then now they send that larger file. It's sort of unlikely, I think, for a bunch of reasons. One is that if they're going to pull these records for you, they're probably going to pull them for everybody. It would really require them to have just two different people on two different days, and one of them does the job and one of them doesn't do it. So it's not impossible, but it's pretty unlikely. And I would also say that your access of these records doesn't go into that log. That log I was talking about, people, everyone who accesses your records gets their name in a log. That's only true of people other than you. So, does that cover it?
Yeah, I went to Catholic school, so I mean, I'm pretty much screwed either way.
Yes, I feel your pain, man. Arguing with Jesuits was great training for being a lawyer, though. I mean, like, it's like, you know, yes, but Father, but didn't John Cardinal Newman say man is... man may believe what he chooses and be answerable for what he chooses to believe. And do you believe, Father, that the cardinal was referring to you? Oh, sorry.
So I'm curious about the intersection of a school's FERPA obligations and also the school's self-assured right to decide who goes there. And I have a bit of an anecdote to go with it, which is my university, Brown University, has a big list of academic code violations, things they'll kick you out of school for, and sandwiched right in between falsifying your records and destroying other students' classwork is, I quote, gaining access to a recommendation without permission once rights have been waived.
I'm not even totally sure I understand what happened there. So we're talking about Brown has a thing that says one of the things you can get in trouble for is gaining access to one's records without permission. Or...
Yeah, that's right up there with cheating. It says it would get in the way of fair grading procedures.
Apparently Brown says if you get access to someone's records without permission, I mean, I sort of wonder, like, is by operation of law permission? Like, that seems pretty permissive to me. I would take the position that if a school were to try to discipline somebody under a rule like that for engaging in the use of FERPA, that would be a violation of FERPA, which is the sort of thing they would lose their federal funding for.
So I'm a little curious, though. As a student, when I waive the right to see my letters of recommendation, am I waiving it in the FERPA sense?
No. The question was, when you waive your right to see letters of recommendation, are you waiving your right to see them later for FERPA? No. I mean, usually when we're talking about, like, I only know about LSAC and like and going to law school for that, but you waive them, you can see them after they're sent, but you waive the right to see them before they're sent.
Well, that's bullshit.
Well, I mean, then I guess the answer is, you know, don't waive it. This is the thing. It is kind of bogus, but.
My question is, how does the removal of certain parts of your record get affected by different versions of that record? So say I have a student record that existed my junior, sophomore, freshman, senior year, and I find out about something after I graduate. What would prevent someone from pulling an older version of my record before something heinous was deleted?
You know, the question was about if you correct one version of the record, and this record exists in multiple places, how do you stop somebody from getting the other record? There's no simple way to do that. I mean, the good news is that the records that are going to affect you are going to be the ones that are at that central location where you're requesting it. Because, I mean, I guess an example here would be, so you have something in your high school record that you correct after you've gone to college, but before you go to graduate school. And now you've corrected it in the high school, but the college has the old high school version. You might have to actually write to the college and say, here's the amended record, I want this included. They shouldn't have a big issue with that, because what do they care? But
I guess going back to your point of you could never know, is if you just get flatly denied, then how do you control which version of your record they got?
If you get denied what? Like, if you get denied access to the
record? Say you're applying for graduate school and they just deny you, and you never find out it's because they have an old record. What course of action do you have then?
Yeah, the question would be, what happens if you get denied it in your graduate school application, and it turns out ultimately it's because your college had your older version of the uncorrected version of the high school record? I don't think there's a simple fix for that. I think this is a good reason to request both and look at them both, because I don't think there'd be any damages against the college for having the wrong record, and the high school I don't think there'd be damages against because they corrected it. So I think the only thing to do is to request it before you apply and then see if they've got the older version.
Cool, thanks.
Hi, so similar to your question, actually. So I just went through the college application process, and I'll be going to college in a month. But I remember that on the Common App, we had to check a box that says that we waive our FERPA rights. And if we don't do that, we couldn't submit the application. So from what I understood, from what my college counselor said, she said that we have to do this to ensure that we can't read our teacher recommendations. So I guess I'm wondering, I guess similar to what you asked, at what point can I read those and how?
Well, the question was about on the Common App, and also congratulations, but the question was on the Common App.
Thank you.
If it makes you waive your FERPA rights. And the explanation that you got was that it was so you couldn't read your recommendations. There's a probably simpler explanation as to why they do that. I mean, that may be one effect of it. But waiving your FERPA rights, they couldn't actually distribute your transcripts without that. So that if you don't waive your FERPA rights, they actually can't give your grades either, because your FERPA rights also say that other people can't distribute your records. You should be able to, at any time after that's submitted, request those recommendations and see them, because you waive those FERPA rights with respect to the third-party company that's assembling these. That's assembling the Common App.
Right.
You preserve your FERPA rights with the institution. I mean, there's no way to permanently give up your FERPA right that I'm aware of. So, and I should also say that those FERPA rights will follow you around till you die, literally till you die. Dead people don't get FERPA rights. This comes up every so often, because you'll have a situation where there'll be, I mean, sadly, like people who go on shooting rampages and then either kill themselves at the end of them or they get shot at the end of them. And people want to go back to see, well, did the school know that this person was off, that they had some problem, and did they do anything about it? And the schools will sometimes try to say, well, we can't give you that because it's an education record. And the answer is, so, you know, once you've passed on to the great beyond, Your privacy rights are not, your privacy rights traveled with you, and those records are no longer private. So anyway, these FERPA rights are yours until death, and you can inspect those records anytime after you give them to the, anytime after they've been sent up to the Common App people.
So I could just ask my college, and they'll hand them over through the process?
They'll just hand them over.
Great.
Like, you waive your right to FERPA with respect to the Common App, but you can't waive it.
Got it.
With respect to the ability to inspect your record.
Makes sense.
Well, you know, unless they try to kick you out.
Of course. Oh, yeah, totally.
And I should also say, this is a useful thing to say. Like, one weird wrinkle of this is your rights under FERPA only kick in once you've actually matriculated. Such that, like, if a school rejects you, you wouldn't have an ability to inspect their record of you as to why they rejected you, because you're not a student there.
Mm-hmm. But once I am a student there, I can actually look at what they said about my application.
Absolutely.
Really?
If they've kept it. I mean, there's no obligation necessarily to keep application materials. Some schools do, some schools don't.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. So I've got a question about the arbitration when you dispute something that's on the record.
Sure.
Who pays for the arbiter? And if you're if you go to a small school or a small town, there is a chance that there's not someone who would be viewed negatively for participating in that process. And how do you, if that's the case, how do you get somebody that's neutral, and who's paying this guy that's going to have to come for the next time?
Well, yeah, the question was about in the process to correct the record, who pays for it, who pays for the process? The school pays for the process, but the school is entitled to use any process that hypothetically gives you a full and fair chance to be heard in front of a neutral decision maker. So they don't necessarily have to get an arbitrator. They can get anybody on campus who they can make a straight-faced argument isn't going to be impacted by the outcome of the decision. I will say there's a great incentive on schools that once things have gone this far, there's a great incentive on schools to try to do this right the first time, given that they're going to be paying for every time they do it. So if they were to do it and it turns out that it wasn't fair, then the Department of Education and or a court could order them to do it again and again and again until they do it fairly. So I've heard of only one case where I know of where that was an issue, involving the fine people of the New York City public school system, where they didn't give a full and fair chance to be heard, and they were told to do it again.
Thank you.
Do parents have access to their children's FERPA records?
First of all, do parents have access to their children's FERPA records? In high school, they do, until the child is 18. In college, it doesn't matter how old you are. I went to college when I was 15, because I'm from the middle of nowhere in Ohio, and I was coming to New York City. How long do you want to hang out in Ohio? If you've been in Ohio for 20 minutes, you've seen Ohio. Pretty much all of it. You know, I saw a cow, I saw a llama, I'm done here. And I saw the cheese museum. So I pretty much saw the highlights. We're pretty much done. Even LeBron left, so you can see how that. I was so mad when he left the first time, man. I was so salty. Back when he first left after $127 million and no rings, I would tell a joke. I'd say, LeBron and I have a lot in common. We both left Cleveland. We're both bald, and we don't know who LeBron James's daddy is. I was salty. Anyway, I'm fine now. He got a title. He can go where he wants now. Anyway, I already forgot the question.
The parent one?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
The one exception is that if a student is a dependent and the parents are paying the bills, the parents have a right to see the economic records of the college. So stuff about tuition that you can send to the parents. And that boils down to, are you claimed as a dependent on your parents' tax return? That doesn't give them the right to any of your other records, just the financial records. So if you're in college, the only records your parents could ever get would be your financial records, and that's only if they're paying your bills. Your tuition, not your bills, your tuition. But other than that, everybody who goes to college is considered an adult for purposes.
Okay. We're kind of out of time. We're over a minute and a half already, and we're trying to get set up for the next.
Well, sorry about that. Well, hope some of that was useful. Come see me at the Paris Paris Room for the workshop if you want to request your records. And I'll see you next year with the Buffalo Wings.